From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Martin Lee, and this is the Autosport Podcast. Well, it's Saturday, 3rd of April today, and on the podcast we reveal the secrets to how race teams find hidden lap time. Welcome to the latest episode in our series revealing the work that teams and their suppliers do to beat their competition. Today, Autosport's technical editor Jake Boxall-Legg chats with AVL Racing's Daniel Blendorfer. AVL work across multiple racing series with the biggest names in motorsport, and once again, they're working with us to bring you, our listeners and readers, greater insight into what really happens in the often unexplained technical world. How do race teams gain free horsepower? With regulations limiting engine development, it's crucial to optimise every component. How does motorsport bring technology from the racetrack to the road? And what are the areas of focus around reducing friction to go faster? Let's find out. Here's JBL.
So, Daniel, thank you for joining me today. So, first of all, would you be able to tell us a little bit about your role at AVL?
Sure. Thanks for having me, first of all. My name is Daniel Blendorfer. I'm part of the AVL Racing Group since 2014. Started as project manager for test bench testing, so I spent a lot of time together with NASCAR teams and Formula 1 and Formula 2 teams at the test bench in Graz in our headquarters. And now since already 2 years, I'm part of the Instrumentation and Test Systems Group. So I'm responsible for, simply speaking, putting the proposals and technical content for our customers together. And also I'm in charge of product management and R&D development of new tools and systems for our customers.
So it's quite a busy job you have. So today, obviously, we're talking about friction optimization and various other things relating to that. But first of all, would you just be able to go into why efficiency is just so important to race teams?
When you talk about efficiency, what is efficiency? It's making the most of what you have. Either it's battery capacity, battery energy, electric energy, or it's chemical energy in the case of an internal combustion engine. When we talk about perspective from a passenger car, from a road vehicle, efficiency means the more efficient car gets at a longer distance with the same amount of energy available in the tank or in the battery. When you talk about racing, when you have a dedicated mileage for a distance you need to cover during a race event, it's the same for everybody. Basically, you have also the same amount of energy available for every team, for every car. That means the most efficient car will be the fastest car. That's just how racing teams will understand efficiency. It's just getting a faster car.
And so obviously we've spoken about efficiency, and we see in the past that in the last few years, at least, Mercedes has taken the internal combustion engine efficiency to over 50%. Obviously, it's a big factor in Formula E as well. So how does that become such a differentiator? I know it's just about speed, but how do you get to that point, really?
Yeah, you mentioned it already. So first of all, in the last decades from the beginning on, the focus was, for the majority, was to focus on the engine itself, on the combustion engine or on the e-motor. Nowadays, we call it a power unit. So it's a combination of internal combustion engine and multiple e-motors. Because you focus on these components because there's the most to gain from the beginning. When we start with a traditional combustion engine, the efficiency was at 35%, something like that, for a good engine. And nowadays, you mentioned it, Mercedes stated that they exceeded the 50% efficiency lever. When you look at an e-motor, there's, where are we? 98%, 99% efficiency from an e-motor. So now we are just getting to a point where there's not a lot to gain anymore. So all the other teams are also, speaking of Formula One, on similar efficiency levels. So you can still throw a lot of money at these components, and they will do for sure, but there's just not a lot potential anymore in these components. So therefore, in the last couple of years, the focus also moved slightly to the full driveline, to also to single components, to just to make sure you don't lose more friction than you really need to lose in the all rotating components. So now when we talked to the teams, we also realized that they are really doing a lot of gearbox testing, a lot of full driveline testing, just to make sure they're not losing available energy in these components. And also not for the full driveline. So they now do also component testing to the single component, to a single bearing even.
So that sort of segues nicely onto the next part of that. You talk about every rotating component, but something that we never really sort of talk about or see is the role of a wheel bearing. And obviously that relationship between your powertrain and the wheels is one of the most important on a car. But with regards to wheel bearings, kind of what job do they do? And is it something that top teams in racing are going to manufacture themselves, or are they going to buy in? And down the line, would it be a standard part ideally? What would you think?
The wheel bearing itself, it's obviously the connecting component between somewhere between the tire and the suspension. When we go the path from the suspension, there is the upright. So in a formula car, at least, there's the upright. Then we have the wheel bearing, and inside the wheel bearing rotates the connecting part to the wheel itself. Just to highlight what kind of stress this wheel bearing needs to go through while an average lap. It needs to cope all the forces which are acting on the racing vehicle. So it's the static weight of the vehicle itself. You have the downforce, so multiple tons in Formula One, but also in NASCAR, we exceed the 1,000 kilograms of downforce lever. Also the acceleration and braking forces, the lateral forces when going through corners. And when we look into NASCAR or oval racing, we also have the banking of the track itself, which makes it even worse for the wheel bearing. Performing under these circumstances means sustaining the full race distance or the full expected lifetime of this component while guaranteeing to have the maximum efficiency is really stressful. And therefore, the teams also now dedicate a lot of resources into developing and tuning these components. Also, you asked raised the question regarding making a standardized bearing or full resource bearing. Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah. So if you know, obviously looking at it series by series, so you use the NASCAR example, and the amount of stress that these bearings go through. Mm. Is it a standard part over there, or is it something that the teams are doing themselves and probably could be standard?
It's not a standard component yet. The small teams are just purchasing standard bearings from dedicated NASCAR bearings, obviously, from some dedicated suppliers. They take them as they are. The bigger teams, that means that they have just more budget available, would also develop them their own bearings. So they do the design work and do the simulation work. But the manufacturing itself will be done by dedicated bearing manufacturers. They just have to know how to build it properly. But I would say the most resources goes into tuning the bearing. It's not only the manufacturing, this is one point, but tuning in case of the tuning parameters you have on a wheel bearing. So for example, the preload or the type of lubricant, amount of lubricant, or the target temperature, braking procedures exam, especially, so the running procedure of a bearing. This is done in the teams by the teams directly. Maybe there will be a point where this component will be standardized. Could be, and there is always thoughts going on and discussions going on to standardize multiple components, as they did for Formula E, for example. But it's always under the they try to save costs, basically, to reduce the cost when they define regulations like standard components. But we would say, as long as there is budget available, the teams will use it somehow. So if you go, for example, for the standard Formula 2 brake, the brake component, this was done to have a standard carbon-carbon disc available for every team. So they will not develop their own brakes and save costs by that. What was the outcome? Every team purchases as many discs as possible, just to compare them internally and pick the best one. So there's not really a cost saving effect with that. So,
so just overall, when it comes to, you know, considering the design of a bearing and that sort of thing, kind of how much design work goes into it, and is it sort of something that you can change sort of pretty quickly, or does it sort of take a lot of development to work with?
In design purposes, the focus is packaging, so to see the full wheel assembly as one piece, just to have a more compact wheel bearing. This is for sure development or design work that goes on inside the teams. There's also the factor of temperature, because fairly close to the wheel bearing itself, there's the rotating brake disc, which is glowing hot, so beyond 1,000 degrees Celsius, and is acting obviously also on the wheel bearing itself, which then in next step also has an impact on efficiency of the wheel bearing. So the efficiency is obviously temperature dependent. So that could also be a factor for design works, just to have a coating, a shielding available for the wheel bearing, so it does not get too hot. On the other hand, for race categories where there's not a lot of braking going on, for Formula E, for example, you may struggle to get the wheel bearing up to a certain target temperature, because if it's too cold, simply speaking, the lubricant is too sticky and causes a lot of friction. So you want the bearing to be on a certain target temperature, beyond ambient temperature, obviously. So in the design work, you may consider to get more heating into the wheel bearing itself.
And when you consider the wheel bearings and every other sort of rotating part of the car that might be subject to friction, can you sort of quantify that in terms of a horsepower loss or an energy loss in, you know, Formula One or Formula E? How much energy ends up getting wasted because of, you know, friction in the system?
Mm-hmm. We in ABL, we have developed a tool dedicated for wheel bearing testing. So we're able to introduce forces, so dynamic forces with actuators into the wheel bearing while doing a lab replay. So we can spin the bearing, put loads on it, also have the availability of control the temperature of the bearing with a temperature enclosure. And while all that is going on on a dynamic way, so on a full lab replay, we can also measure the friction on a very accurate way. And while developing this tour, we also had a development partner in form of a formula team, which spent together with us a lot of time on the test bench in Graz. They brought their standard wheel bearings to our rig, and in the course of the development of our tool, we just also learned a lot about wheel bearings. And in the case of this standardized wheel bearing, we just played around with a couple of parameters and developed our own break-in procedure, so run-in procedure of the bearing. And while only this run-in procedure was happening, so starting from the completely brand new bearing and just after, I would say, 1 to 2 hours of running under certain circumstances on the rig, we measured that the efficiency increased by 10% only by doing a proper running procedure. And then we played around with a couple of tuning parameters, so preload, and as mentioned before, the amount of lubricant, the type of lubricant, and also played around with the target temperature, we want to run the bearing under a race situation. And we were able to increase the efficiency, so compared to the standard brand new bearing, by 65%. So we reduced the friction by 65%, but just a work of really a R&D work on a test bench of roughly 1 week of working. 65% really is a lot. And I need to add to this comment that we did leave all regulation limitations aside just to max the bearing itself out. But in the case of this this wheel bearing, of this category, the wheel bearing is run in, the regulation also define limitations of preload, limitations of amounts, so minimum amount of lubricant, for example. And while being inside the boundaries of the regulations, we managed to increase the efficiency of the wheel bearing by roughly 50%. And coming back to your question, to quantify that, what is 65 or 50% of efficiency in a wheel bearing? What does the team really gain from it on the race situation? We just threw some numbers into our vehicle simulation model. That's also a simulation tool developed by AVL. It's a vehicle model, a very detailed, physically really accurate model, where different types of race cars can be simulated and virtually sent around the track. And we just took as baseline a NASCAR model. We have very accurate NASCAR models available, and sent our our NASCAR, virtual NASCAR with a standard wheel bearing around a super speedway, and then increased the efficiency of the, again, virtual wheel bearing by 40%. And the outcome was that only by that measure we could reduce the lap time by 0.1 seconds. That may does not sound a lot, but in NASCAR, this will be quite a difference compared to the other teams. We also try to quantify this. If you want to have 0.1 seconds in lap time advantage by just tuning the engine, which is the traditional way to do it, we would be in need of roughly 4 horsepowers at the crankshaft to also reduce the lap time by 0.1 seconds. And 4 horsepower in NASCAR is nearly not available anymore. These engines are maxed out over, as the regulations are frozen since multiple years. Every manufacturer has achieved a decent level of horsepower, which is similar all over all the manufacturers. So it's nearly impossible to gain 4 horsepowers on a crankshaft anymore. So that it's quite something to have this lap time advantage just by tuning a really small component. We also did similar simulations with a Formula E car, and with the same increase of efficiency, we managed to reduce the over a full race distance, we managed to gain 2.5 seconds compared to a standard Formula E car.
That's quite a lot. obviously, the sort of time delta that you described in NASCAR wasn't big, but it's usually quite a short lap in NASCAR events. So, as you say, it's quite a big gap. But you also spoke about temperature of the lubricants inside and preload and things like that. Because obviously we have carbon brakes getting incredibly hot. You don't want the bearing to get too hot, but at the same time, as you said, you don't want it to be too cold. How do you manage the temperatures for all those parts in the wheel assembly and get those sort of bearings into the right sort of window, if you like?
As for all components, you have the possibility to introduce some kind of shielding on the components to prevent of getting too much radiation from the disc into the bearing and cause too high temperatures. You also have the possibility to introduce dedicated cooling, obviously. So if you look at the wheel assembly, the full wheel assembly of a Formula One car. Currently, there is so much going on that there, for sure, you have the possibility to introduce direct wind to the wheel bearing to introduce some cooling. Also, by the mentioned tuning parameters of preload and amount of lubricant, you also directly have an effect on the temperature that will be set in the wheel bearing over a race distance. So there's multiple ways to adjust the wheel bearing temperature. It's also really important to find out on, this is unfortunately really tricky to do it on a racetrack, to find out what is the optimum target temperature. So where do I want my bearing to be on the racetrack? Is it 80 degrees C or should I run it at 100 degrees C? Maybe the efficiency is higher at 100 degrees C, but the bearing will fall apart over half the race distance. All these thoughts is really hard to find out on a racetrack, and it's really a gamble to maybe reduce the amount of lubricant and then send it on the car on the racetrack just by hoping that it will not fall apart before the end of the race. So therefore, you want to spend a lot of time on a dedicated testing device, obviously, just to prepare the bearing properly and be set for the next race.
And so it's sort of very, very interesting to listen to this, because obviously, as we know, motorsport is a huge sort of propellant of technology, if you like. It really sort of brings things into the public eye. So I guess the sort of next step on that is whether these things are able to work their way back into road cars, so that, you know, down the line in, you know, hybrid or electric vehicles, we're using, you know, even less energy thanks to all of these tiny little things that have added up.
Yeah, for sure. It will, and it is currently also already happening, that this kind of development finds its way into the passenger cars, in the passenger car world. There has always been development going on in wheel bearings, but especially with the move to battery electric vehicles, so BEVs, where efficiency is even more key than for an internal combustion engine. They really put more and more focus and manpower into developing and tuning their wheel bearings for road cars. Why is it more important for BEVs than for internal combustion engines? It's just if the full vehicle is more efficient with an internal combustion engine, or less efficient, on the other way around, is it less efficient than internal combustion engine car, you may don't achieve the mileage. So you cannot achieve 300 miles, but just only 280. But that's not a big deal. You just go to the pump station, refuel, and there you go. With a battery electric vehicle, you just don't go to the next power charger and pump it up in 10 minutes. You lose a lot of time by just having a least efficient powertrain with a battery electric vehicle. So there's even more focus because it's just not convenient for the customers. So therefore, they are also already putting a lot of effort into tuning their wheel bearings. And that is the same story as for the racing vehicles. It's again preload, choosing the right materials. But even more, the focus is the lifetime of these wheel bearings compared to a racing car, obviously, because we do not only one race distance of 2 hours, we want to have the same wheel bearing for 100,000 kilometers. Wheel bearings, the only bearing on of focus or something like that?
So we've spoken a lot about wheel bearings today, and obviously we've spoken about other components as well. But of course, there are other bearings within, you know, race cars as well. What are the sort of main areas of focus, if you like, within that area?
That's a good question. When we started introducing this, let's call it friction rig, this testing device for wheel bearings, we talked to a lot of customers, and they were not only in the area of racing teams. They were also coming on directly from bearing manufacturers or providers of lubricants. And there is, inside these companies, is a lot of focus on wheel bearings, but also they raised the question, what do we have in stock for e-motor bearings? because as said before, the efficiency of an e-motor is really an important topic for the manufacturers and also the suppliers for the OEMs. So therefore, they do a lot of investigations of the main bearings of e-motors also. That's quite a different bearing. I mean, wheel bearing will rev to 2,500 or 3,000 RPM tops. An e-motor can rev up to 40,000 when you talk to when you have to focus on passenger cars. On the other hand, the loads on a wheel bearing on an e-motor bearing will not nearly be as high as on a wheel bearing, obviously. So so we went back to our R&D department, and we are also now coming up with a solution for dedicated for e-motor bearings, e-motor main bearings, which may sound simple, but when you want to have a really accurate torque measurement at the RPM range of up to 40,000, you will start to struggle to find a proper measurement device for this kind of torques at this RPM. But there you see it, and also we learned that the focus is not only on the main assembly, the e-motor itself. It's also really going down to component testing in the meantime, just to find the really last bit of efficiency in the full drivetrain.
So Daniel, thank you so much for talking me through that today. So much going into that, so much in information into the world of bearings and removing friction from within race cars. It's certainly what you would consider an underreported part of race car and automotive design as well. So thank you so much for talking me through that.
Thank you very much for having me. What a pleasure.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the podcast today. We always learn something when we talk to our friends at AVL. Check out any of the previous shows we've made with them. If you're interested in the technical aspects of motorsport, just search AVL in your favorite podcast app. And we'll see you on the next one.